May we bow our heads in prayer. Loving and mighty God, at this hour and this minute, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, for you are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Happy New Year. Yeah. Well, you know, actually, we're here finally with a Sunday that is not really holiday anymore. We've sort of got the holidays behind us. I hope you all had a very good Christmas, a new Christmas, I guess one could say. We are all now in the new year. We all have our new resolutions to keep for this year. And so it's fitting that this thing we call the church calendar celebrates this Sunday as the Sunday of the baptism of the Lord, as we read in the Gospel of Mark this morning specifically. But actually what has happened is we are now synchronized with all four of our Gospel stories. We went through Christmas. We had our Nativity stories. Four Gospels, only two Nativity stories. And those two stories having basically nothing to do with each other at all. But now all four gospel writers are in agreement. This is the beginning. The Lord's baptism is the beginning of his ministry. And though it may have been useful to know a few things about him and how he was considered from the Gospels of Matthew and the Gospels of Luke, now we move forward with the story, because the important thing is what he will teach us and how we come to know him, how he comes to know us. This is the beginning. We have in our Holy Bible a couple of in the beginning passages. We use one of them at Christmas. It's the very beginning of the Gospel of John, before John gets to the baptism story. It's not exactly a Nativity story, but it's familiar to all of us. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. But we also have another in the beginning story. This one you and I read for us graciously this morning, familiar to all of us. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was a formless void, and darkness was on the water. And God said, "Let there be light." We all know this. We all know this because this is a very controversial passage in this day and time. We all know that there are some who would have this be taught as science in our schools, creation science, and that what we know of evolution and of physics is only theory and not true practice. It's conceived by some people, it's seen by some people, as there being a division between science and this thing we call religion, between science and faith. And much of it comes down to the interpretation of this first chapter of Genesis, in the beginning, when God creates the heavens and the earth. Now, I would argue that there's really no particular reason to see there being any kind of a struggle between the church and science. In fact, for most of history, they have ridden along hand in hand pretty well. The church sponsored most of the great scholars through history that have made the scientific advancements we have. We have a few places where there's some rocky times. We know the story of Galileo Galilei, and how it was required of him to recant his vision of the heavens and how things actually work, lest he be excommunicated from the church. We don't often know the story of that period of time in church history for Galileo. It was a difficult time for the Pope, there were princes throughout Europe who were being very uppity and were not listening and were not being obedient servants to him. So when a little child like Galileo came forward and wanted to make a little bit of noise, it's just like, be quiet. You know, just be quiet, not now. It's sort of like when your sister is being roundly upbraided by your parents for being home so late last night, and you come forward right then and say, can I borrow the car tonight? No, not a good time to ask the question. This is what happened with Galileo. Nicholas Copernicus, Galileo's ideas were not that much different from Copernicus. No protest with Copernicus when his first visions of the operations of the heaven came forward. Another great division that people will sometimes see comes in the mid-19th century with Charles Darwin and the theory of evolution and natural selection. That's problematic. In the Age of Enlightenment, and Darwin is a part of this Age of Enlightenment, in the Age of Enlightenment, the church was, as I said before, basically the sponsor of academic study, of science. And there was this great hope in the beginning, the time of Emanuel Swedenborg would be an example, that science, our reason, our faculty for rationality, would finally come to be able to prove all the stories that are in here, that we would have finally scientific evidence that every word, every jot here was absolutely physically true. That was shot to pieces by Charles Darwin. Cannot be denied that it was. And there was a strange result from that. Two factions spin off from that. One faction saying that if Darwin's theories are contrary to what is in the Holy Bible, they must be false because this must be truth. And the other faction saying that if what is said in this Holy Bible is contrary to what we find in science, then this must be false. There can be no truth in it. These are the two polar extremes, and we still find ourselves in the throes of this today, all the controversy about creation science. Forgotten in this by many people, two things. First of all, in the 1970s, the Pope issued an edict from the Vatican that Darwin's theories of evolution were established scientific fact and were in no way in contradiction to the teachings of the Catholic Church. How many of you knew that? That's the official position of the Church, of the Catholic Church. Good, Joy. And Leia, it figures. Okay. Another thing to keep in mind is from the beginning almost of Christian faith, all the way back to St. Augustine, who formulated this thing called the doctrine of accommodation. Thank you. The doctrine of accommodation, saying that if we find that our religious teachings are in conflict with new scientific understanding, then obviously we need to reconsider our religious teachings in this new light. This is the position of the church since the 5th century. Genesis as science. I think I've talked about this a little bit here before, once before. Genesis as science. I just, looking at the text itself, it just doesn't make sense. There's no rational reason to think that this is a description of the creation of the physical universe. Our reading this morning is that God says, let there be light, and there is day, and there is night. In this story, that's day one. In this story, it won't be until day four that God creates the sun and the moon to rule the day and the night. This is not good science. And I don't understand how anyone can think that an intelligent person who scribed all of this, who wrote all of this, could possibly think that it would work this way. I think there's internal evidence right there that, no, this is not about physical creation. just wouldn't work that way. Another curious aspect of this Genesis story, the mantra that is repeated after each day of creation, is that there was evening and there was morning on the first day. Now, is this the way you think of it? You know, when did the day start? It started this morning? There was evening and there was morning the first day. Now, our Jewish friends, and I've talked to some of my Jewish friends thinking about this in the past few weeks. If I ask them, are you Jewish? And they say yes. I'm like, when does the day begin? In the evening or in the morning? Because I've asked them, are you Jewish? They're on alert. And they're like, yeah, it begins in the evening. Shabbat, you know, Saturday is the Sabbath day. And so we have prayers Friday evening because that's the beginning of Shabbat. If I don't ask them, are you Jewish? I'm like, hey, where do you think the day begins? Is it night or day? Everybody, it starts in the morning, of course. You get a good start on the day. They have learned in their preparation for their bar mitzvah, their bat mitzvah. They do understand the lesson that is taught in understanding that the day begins with the evening and then the morning follows. And what is that lesson? Well, to help you understand how fundamental this is to our understanding, to our coming together to be in this little congregation here, this Swedenborgian church, this new church, I brought in what is known as the Green 30. This is a collection of all of the published theological works of Emanuel Swedenborg. It's by no means exhaustive. There are no diaries here. There are no journals. There are a few indexes. There's certainly none of the letters that he wrote. There's not On the Worship and Love of God, which is a fairly formal text. And my thought had been I was going to pile them all up and get Udai to help me hold them. I tried this at home, and they won't possibly stand up the way the books are bound. And now that I put it on here, I don't think even I could reach the very top to hold the first volume down to do it. So I'll dispense with that. You don't have to do anything. The point being, not the point being, there are ways to look through these texts and know how to use them. There are a number of indexes, some of them written by Emanuel Swedenborg himself. There are compendiums. In this day and time, there are digital ways to search through the text. So we can find choice little bon mots from anywhere in here to describe, we hope, perfectly the situation that we're trying to explain on any Sunday morning or at any point in our life. I don't need any of that to do this morning. Because I can take this. This is the very first. If we were to stack this up, this is the very first volume. The first volume of The Secrets of Heaven, the Arcana Celestia. As I said, we're talking about beginnings today. We're going to go to page 2. All of this work. Page 2. While the mind cleaves to the literal sense alone, no one can possibly see that such inner things are contained within the word. Thus, in these first chapters of Genesis, nothing is discoverable from the sense of the letter other than that the creation of the world is treated of, and the Garden of Eden, which is called paradise, and Adam as the first created man. Who supposes anything else? But it will be sufficiently established in the following pages that these matters contain secrets which have never yet been revealed, and in fact, that the first chapter of Genesis, in the internal sense, treats in general of the new creation of man or of his regeneration. And this in such a manner that there is not the least expression which does not represent, signify, and enfold within it these things. In other words, this book is about you. I usually, in standing up before a group to preach, I don't like to say you because I'm like singling you out, you know, jabbing you in the chest or something. I could stand up and say this book is about me. George Stoll, one of the great scholars of our denomination, wrote a wonderful little book a few years ago, a book about me. But if I say this is about me, then you might be sitting there going, yeah, well, what about me? So if I say it's a book about us, it loses a little bit of its impact in the collective sort of a thing. It's a book about you. You. In the beginning, before you were aware of anything spiritual, were a formless void in the darkness. The light had not come in yet. The presence of God was moving about on the surfaces of the water. God naturally is there. He's there all over the place because God just is. What did he tell Moses? Go and tell Pharaoh that I am sent you. And then when the light comes in, and we begin to be reborn, we begin to be born in the Spirit, the heavens and the earth begin to be created at that point. Now, I'm not talking about necessarily get religion. Now, this is way in the very beginning when you first realize there might be something more than what your five senses register. It might be you find yoga. And I don't mean yoga as a replacement for doing Nautilus, but yoga where it's something that you do a physical practice, but that brings you into an internal sense of peace. And you begin to understand there is something a little bit beyond anything that we can explain and understand. It might be when, if you are a thorough rebel against the Christian church, that you begin to adopt pagan practices. You might touch into the religious practices of Native Americans, whether it's simply offering to the four winds or going through the rigors of a sweat lodge. It might be when your office just decides, you know what, I don't really know why it is, but I think we need to have somebody come in here who understands something about feng shui and just get this place set up. I don't know how it works, but I know it's there in the beginning. In the beginning was darkness, and then there was the morning. Emanuel Swedenborg, in the middle of the 18th century, said that most people probably make it to the first day, at least an opening of awareness. But very few, he say, will make it to the second day, fewer till the third. Almost nobody to the sixth, practically no one at all to just the final day of rest. It is an ongoing thing. And he claims, and it makes sense to me because it's been my experience, that we will progress from one day to the next, not by being brilliant, not by being dutiful little scholars and students and studying all this stuff, but because some crisis comes up and pushes us forward. Because after the morning, after the dawn, will come another time of darkness, another evening, that will then, God willing, lead us on to the next day. And the next. One of my favorite of the days is when he describes in day three, as it says in Genesis, this is when all the herbs come forth, when the shoots, tender shoots, begin to come forward. Life, vegetable life, starts to exist in the world. To Emanuel Swedenborg, it's like, well, that's you. And I have this kind of image of myself as like having all these little green polyps, you know, sort of like a jade plant, like all over me. Because I'm thinking that all this is working and that I'm a brilliant guy because it's me. Because it's ideas that come out of me. And that works really well for a time. And this is when you got religion. And you start to drive all of your friends crazy. You know, just you can't talk about anything else. Or, you know, you've got to be vegan. I became vegan and now we've got to, you know. It's just, you think it's all you. And that's fine.
And it's good. You have made progress. You're in the third day. But a darkness will come when all this that is you and your brilliance doesn't seem to work anymore. And you will, hopefully, God will help pull you through to the next day. We all go through these times. We all have losses. We lose jobs. We lose relationships. We lose loved ones. It's difficult to push through. An example from my own family, my grandfather. And Pappy, I hope you don't mind me doing this. I do this because I love you, and I do this out of respect. But my grandfather was a good church-going man. He was a public figure, went to church every Sunday, and everybody could see that he was there at church every Sunday. When my brother and I were lucky enough to spend a night or a weekend or even a week with him and my grandmother, it was my grandfather who always saw to it that we got down on our knees by the bed every evening and said our prayers before we went to bed. My grandfather suffered a catastrophic loss. His youngest daughter, my aunt, one of these surprise babies who comes along late in life. You don't. What do you mean we're going to have another child? She came along and at 16 died in a very tragic accident, which my grandfather had reason to believe he had some cause in it because he had provided the means by which this would happen. And he was broken. He was broken. He never went to church again. I don't need a God who would allow this to happen, was his explanation. And I like that because he was an intelligent man. It's like a God who will allow this to happen. But it still shows to me he was lost in that darkness, in that night, and did not find the dawn when he had to sit back and reconsider, well, then maybe this concept that I have of God is incorrect. I'm not saying that God made this happen, but he had this feeling that somehow, because he was a good man, God could come in and just stop things. Stop my aunt from making the decisions that she made. Stop my grandfather from making the decisions that he made. All freely. It just happened. And my grandfather was lost from that point forward. His drinking became a little bit less social and a little bit more morose. And he was never able to formulate a new understanding, a deeper understanding of the God who was there all about, all the time, the God that is the God that was ready and willing and eager to help him and to bring him more into the light. And he lost this. He lost church, this place that he could come to. This place with people trained and willing and eager to help him in his journey. A place filled with books and all the information one could want to help you continue in the journey. A place with classes and workshops and prayer groups to help him in his journey. A place with a congregation of sinners who were humble before God and turned to God for all rest, all peace, all solace. A place to come to introduce you to Jesus Christ, the risen Lord. To help be a part of the beginning of his ministry which was targeted and always intended for you, to bring you into the light of heaven, to warm you with the love of God, a place to find a new day. This is the day that the Lord has made. Join me if you can. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Amen. Happy New Year.